Hello, everybody, and welcome to this special Friday edition of Weekly Manga Recap here on August 7th, 2015. I'm iRuler of Time here alongside Rilo T. What's up, man?
I'm scared and confused. It's Friday, Nick. At this point, usually on my Fridays, I'm pantsless, lounging about, halfway into my seventh margarita as I prepare for the weekend, into my seventh episode of the Simpsons Marathon that I'm missing right now. Granted, there's one 5 nights a week, but still, the Friday ones tend to be the best. That's usually the most classic episodes. I'm all kinds of confuzzled, Nick.
I'm sorry to hear that, Chris.
I'm okay with it, though, because you're my buddy, and I do this for you. And I need your help with something, Nick.
Okay.
I am involved in a legal situation.
Okay.
I wanted to phrase it that way to get everyone concerned at first, and then I'm like, okay, no, I'm actually like a tertiary eyewitness in something that's fucking happening at work that's not nearly as interesting if I explain it, so just pretend I'm involved in a murder case or something like that.
Okay.
But I'm going to have to be an eyewitness next week in court.
Seriously?
And yes. And wow. I need to know what is the best legal media reference I can make in court that won't immediately get me thrown out. I need to find something I can just, like, subtly slide into my testimony. And the best I've come up with thus far is the trademark lawyer shotgun briefcase scene from The Wire, where Omar compares himself to the lawyer, saying that they're both thieving people who prey on society. And I'm like, I don't know if I could slide in the line. Yeah, we just alike. You got the briefcase, I got the shotgun. Like, throw that in there and see if that flies. I need something better. I don't know if I really want to go with Phoenix Wright. I feel like that's too on the nose. Like, I feel like if I try to throw something like that in there, like, I just suddenly shout, like, objection! And someone's going to be like, overruled and cliche. You're in double contempt of court. One for real court and then two for faux pas court. That was sad.
You could try doing something from Gakuhote. No one would get that.
So. Yeah, I was like, no one's going to understand that, though.
So you want people to understand it.
I need it to be classically subtle, Nick. Like, a point where you're like, oh, I get it. That's a reference to something. But you're like, but wasn't that odd? Like, not like, you can't handle the truth. Like, everyone's going to get that. And you're going to be like, do you even try? On something that they're like, wow, you really planned this. You put clearly much more work into this reference than you did into your testimony.
I don't know. I think that I would not have the nerve to do that at all. So there you go.
Because I've been told that the preceding legal figure, I don't know if he's called a judge in this. I think he's called a commissioner or something like that. But I've been told he's kosher with a little bit of humor. So I'm like, look, every event is an opportunity. Maybe this is a way to, like, branch in my startling legal stand-up career. Like, I just start, like, throwing in some good jazz. Like, I just get a couple zingers in there, and he's like, well, that was boom, boom, boom. Like, that was great. Can you open for my murder trial tomorrow? And I'm like, yes, sir. Tell me some info about the victim. He was found with his head smashed in. Like, oh. Anally violated. Like, oh. So can I, does it have to be clean, or can I make it a little bit of a blue stand-up set?
Really? I have nothing to say about that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, Nick, what's going on? We have a lot to talk about this week. But,
We do. We don't have a series yet, but we do have to update some people who have been very kind in supporting the show, and I think we've got a lot of names to read off later.
Yes, we do, but we should mention that if you aren't aware, if you missed last week or whatever, we opened up a Patreon. I'm not going to go through the whole deal. You can listen to last week if you need all the details of it, but our Patreon's been going very well. I'm extremely happy with how it's going. For those of you who haven't seen, we actually reached our third goal, which means you're going to start seeing kind of little tech upgrades here and there for Weekly Manga Recap. Because of it, we put up a new goal that we're about $100 away from at this point, and it's going to be, if we reach it, we're going to start doing Weekly Manga Recap as a video podcast. So Nick and myself will get webcams, we'll figure out the logistics of basically making it so we'll have like talking head versions of us on the screen. So if you're watching live, you'll be able to see us. And then after it's done, we'll still have the MP3 version for, you know, an audio only version for people who just want to catch that. It'll still be on Podbean and iTunes. But then the video version will go up on YouTube. So those who can't watch it live can still see the video version of it. And you'll get all that, like annotations, timestamps, shit like that. All cool stuff. So, yeah. Pretty cool. And I'm trying to think of more beyond that. I had an idea for one related to conventions, but I don't know if it'll fly. I guess I'll need to test it out a little bit. Test the water, so to speak.
Yes. We'll have to figure some stuff out. I think that we didn't know we were going to get to that goal so quickly.
Yeah, I was like, 350, yeah, in my dreams. We'll never get there.
Curse our humility.
I was raised Catholic, Nick. I was taught to never believe in myself and to always expect the worst. I was taught that you're a dirty, dirty sinner. You won't get where you want to be in life. And I was like, all right. Then this came through. So, I don't know. I'm pretty happy with things, though, Nick.
And no longer religious because of this.
Yeah, exactly. And now that we've gotten through that, I think I want to talk about some manga, Nick.
Yeah, let's do this. Let's get into the recap portion of Weekly Manga Recap. Start as we normally do with Black Clover, which had lead color pages this week. Although, I don't know, I feel like that two-page spread is kind of missing something. There's a lot of, like, just dark space there.
There's a little bit. I mean, they're kind of showing us, I guess, the characters who are going to be big going forward. Mm-hmm. So I guess it makes sense.
And they all have white hair.
Well, three of them are from the same family.
And two are from a different family, yeah. So they have red hair.
And then Yuno's there because, for some reason, he's still considered like a main... I'm still important. Yeah, he's like, I'm still an important character despite the fact I show up to smile and believe in Yuno. Yuno, whatever his name is. But seeing it colored... I like the color choice for this series. I don't know, I think this is the first time I've really taken a look at Yuno in full color and like the black wool uniform. I was like, maybe when this is an anime, I'd like it a lot more.
Yes, he actually looks a lot more like Natsu when he's in color, I feel like.
I can definitely see that, yeah. I mean, in this particular, like I'm looking at the double page spread. Yeah. It's a little hard to see that just because he's got so much color from the lighting on his face, he doesn't look like him, but I could definitely see it.
Because his uniform is mostly dark blue, and you know, with the like white fringes and stuff. So that reminds me of Natsu a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, it doesn't help that mages, but not really, yeah, a kind of gimmick. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so last time Asta stood up to all of Noelle's. Siblings, I guess it's confirmed, and said, you guys all suck, basically, and I'm going to become Wizard King and silence every last one of you, which we get to have recapped in full color. That is a white-ass room, by the way. White floors, white tablecloths, white walls. Like, interior decorator needs to be fucking fired, seriously.
Or praised. Perhaps he's a magic interior decorator, like that's his one magic style.
Everything is white!
Yes. That's like his, that's like his law of Ueki, like his side condition. Like, he can create magnificent architecture, but everything is white. And they're just like, alright, well.
Can't be painted over.
Yeah, they're like, alright, just, you know, he really creates it quick, easy, marvelous. It's just all white.
So, I'm not sure exactly what's going on in this picture, but in the first few pages, I guess what we eventually learn is that someone has been run out of the capital, and so he's very resentful over it. And his magic, apparently, is raising zombies. He's got a zombie guy behind him. And also, there's another guy in a cloak there who, basically, after the guy says, oh, I hate those guys, they ran me out, I've got all this awesome magic and stuff, fuck all of them. And then the guy in the cloak is like, who are you talking to? And he's like, myself! Oh, okay then, yeah.
It's a little touche.
Yeah, so, guy with, like, scraggly hair and zombies and stuff.
You gotta call him zombie, dude. If you call him scraggly hair guy, I'm gonna be like, Nick, there's like 20 people in this series. Hairs. There's like three scraggly hairs on the next page.
So the zombie guy is like, oh, I'm gonna get revenge on the Magic Knights. And then we cut back to inside the capital, Everyone is staring at Master, who, of course, has said he's going to become Wizard King. And everyone is having various reactions and stuff. And then one of Noelle's... Well, two of... Actually, all of Noelle's siblings are like, ah, don't be ridiculous. And they immediately summon their magic and keep attacking Asta. Because they're assholes. So Asta keeps on trying to deflect it. Getting rid of all the magic and stuff. They're like, oh, he can erase it. Bah. So one of them summons a sand-armored guard. Just this, like, weird kind of golem thing from all around Asta and grabs him in its hands.
And Natsu shows up and punches him in the face.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
So they're just like, oh, how you dare to behave this way at a festive occasion? You must be given a penalty. You guys attacked him first.
How dare you act this way?
How dare you defend yourself? We will attack you more now.
How dare you defend your friend? Let us go back to insulting people like we do at these good old-fashioned parties.
This is the way things are. It's a grand family tradition to pick on the runt of the family and have no one ever stand up for them. And you ruined that! Fuck you! You know, and Glasses Douche... Well, I can't even call him Glasses Douche anymore. He has proven to be very middle of the road as far as the assholes in this series. Glasses Dude are looking on, not doing anything, because you know is important? I don't know. And so one of Noelle's siblings is like, oh, why so soft, Golden Dawn? Any guy who's that high in himself needs to be taught a physical lesson so that he never makes another mess on the rug. And then launches a giant bullet at Asta. Noelle goes, no! And
interestingly, water magic. So maybe magic is somewhat hereditary, like members of the same family have the same kind of magic.
Yeah, and one of them also used mist, which is related to that. Although one of them did use sand, so...
Well, I think there's one of the guys in this group isn't...
Oh, yeah, there's another one who has joined in.
I think one of them might be from the other family, the Vermillions, I think.
So maybe, yeah, maybe you're right. Different forms of water magic and stuff. But rather than just being, you know, taking a water bullet to the chest and dying, Noelle summons his other sword, and he just immediately just like, oh, you guys are gonna apologize to Noelle! And he deflects the bullet back at its sender, knocks them off their feet, and so they react by going, oh, did you just make me kneel, you bratty peasant? And then Nozelle, the, I guess, eldest brother, says, don't use your magic so willy-nilly against me. Peasants, giant aura of power and stuff to indicate he's super strong, and he is noted to be the captain of the Silver Eagles, and Asta even feels that his pressure is on a par similar to Captain Yami's, although it feels very different. And so, yes, Captain Solid's like, oh, I'll pass judgment on you. But then, someone else steps forward from one of the other guilds and is like, oh, come on, aren't you guys embarrassed that you're going to this effort because of just one boy? He's introduced as Figolion. Figolion? There are many ways to pronounce that word. Figolion.
Mr. Figolion.
Figolion. We're going to do that from now on. Figolion.
Mr. Figolion.
Mr. Figolion.
Oh, he should just be a fucking... what's her name from Ghostbusters?
Janice.
Yeah, just like, all this for a little boy? Aren't you embarrassed? Well, that was more like fucking Harley Quinn, I guess. Actually, that was kind of a lot of nothing, but... Clearly you see where the limitation of my voice comes in. I can't be Jewish New Yorker women very well.
So, also, someone else steps forward, Leopold Vermillion, and they just say, ah, it's just like Mimosa told me, you're a pretty interesting guy. Rejoice! I, Leopold Vermillion, declare you my rival! And Nasus is like, what?
And Yuno shows the slightest bit of irritation at that. He's like,
but Asta's my rival. My one character trait is being taken away from me by someone with far more charisma and personality.
I mean, I won't comment on it. I will just twitch.
I will twitch with my eyes in a weird expression. Twitch. Mimosa actually knows that Figolion and Leopold are her cousins. So, two different families that are kind of related, I guess. Yeah. Some of the other knights who are not part of those two clans are also start marking on things. One of them is a pair of sisters, and one of them is Sol, who just says, "Guys really are dumb."
She nailed it. We're pretty dumb, Nick.
And she is sisters with the captain. And she keeps on, like, saying, "Ha! Guys are dumb, huh, sis?" You should have some manners. So, "Sorry, sis! No, call me captain. I'm your captain." You just, like, "Hey, can I trade you for Yuno?"
She's just over there like, "Can I have all these shrimp are free, I think." Like, yeah, that's generally what a party means. "Holy shit, there's a big window over here, and one over here, too." Like, there's a lot of windows. Buildings tend to have them. "Look at there, it's fucking birds!" Like, I hate you so much. Stop screaming everything at me.
Then Figolian has a standoff with Solid. And Figolian notes that Lord Julius has allowed him to be here. He may be a peasant, but couldn't you give him a little credit? And Sol's just like, "I never thought I'd hear such words from a royal. The House of Vermilion has grown soft. What sort of credit is an eagle who soars the skies supposed to give an insect who crawls on the ground?" Which is actually a pretty cool line.
It is. And then it seems like they're both, like, it took me a while to realize there's supposed to be two different eyes at first. It's like, is it just the same eye reflected? Why would they do that?
They both go to the same eyeshadow manufacturer.
Yeah, one guy just puts a little bit more on than the other.
It's a lot easier to tell them apart in the color spread, because we see that the House of Vermilion has, like, red eyeshadow patterns, so it makes them really stand out. But yeah, here they just both look black, so... and they both have this standoff, and they're like, mana surges around them. So Figolian has, like, the image of a lion behind him, and Sol has the image of an eagle behind him. And, so I like that. You know, have this, like, giant creature around you to kind of give you a sort of your own flavor to your power. I like that. Anyway, the stand-up is interrupted when some, like, almost completely faceless guy bursts through the door. He's like, "I am an unimportant character here to make an announcement! We're under attack!" And, yeah, the capital's under attack by Zombie Dude, who has this weird pseudo-eye patch. It's almost like a reverse eye patch.
It's like he covers his eye, but he put another eye on top of it to be like, "You know what would be under here, right?"
Yeah, this is where my eye is.
Just not right now.
Just shut up.
Yeah, I have pink eye today. My cat farted on my pillow, now I have pink eye. I don't want to talk about it, but I do. And I don't want to spread my pink eye to everybody while I'm busy sending my zombie suicide bombers into your town. I'm the considerate one here. Jerks.
There you go.
Yeah, I was Black Clover. What'd you think, Mick?
I thought it was all right. It was nice to have a bit more to establish the, you know, kind of factions. And while at first this was just a matter of, "Oh, peasant, look down on you because you're Asta and everyone has to look down on you and stuff," I like the kind of element of this is more of a medieval kingdom. And so you've got these aristocrats who are part of different competing families that don't all get along, while at the same time, the kingdom is potentially going to be at war with another kingdom and stuff. So I like that element of it potentially being expanded upon.
That's fair enough. I was okay with it. I wish it was... It's weird. It's a thing. I recognize this chapter was much better than in recent. I think the zombie guy is at least interested. Like, oh, cool, it's a villain who, you know, seems kind of interesting. Like, seems like he'd be a threat to this world and maybe can provide something to make, like, an interesting opposition to Yuno. And it seems to almost be indicating, like, oh, yeah, let's start building a foundation of a larger villain group based on the one dude who was talking to him and then kind of vanishes. We don't see him. But it's still, like, I don't know. I just have trouble caring about this series right now. Like, I kind of read through it and I was like, oh yeah, okay. And I kind of moved along to the chapters this week that were maybe better or just more ridiculous, like we'll get to in a little bit. I'm okay with it. Like, I feel like the end of the chapter is good and I acknowledge it's like an interesting development, but I'm just like, eh, on the series overall right now.
Yeah. I mean, not Toriko Ann, but...
it's closer to Ann Toriko Ann than I'd like, though.
Right. Well, I guess it's just because a lot of the series that we're high on are very good right now.
Yeah, and the series we're low on fucking introduced hand eyes.
Oh, God.
Fucking hand people.
Okay. Bleach 637.
He's a fucking
hand. Baby, hold your hand.
I wish they'd just call it he's a fucking hand.
He's a fucking hand. So, last time, Kenpachi nearly got his body tearing itself apart, so he got stabbed by Mayuri so that he would be paralyzed, so his body would stop paralyzing, beating itself up and shit. And then we found out that Bernitas is weird, and he uses nerve endings to control people. Anyway. So Mayuri goes on talking to himself for a little bit, and he's like, oh, Zaraki, your eye can move a little still. That's impressive. Oh, you know, I'll just have to make sure I can make Ashizoji's Jizo more broken. Man, you've been sure great for me. Let me be more broken by identifying stuff. Yay! Kind of hate Mayuri.
Nick, you have to love Mayuri. No, he's one of the good guys of some kind. I was listening to Shonen Jump podcast, and they were having a discussion of, like, you know, whether or not he's a good guy, and, like...
Are you fucking kidding me?
Like, the consensus was like, no, he's
this
like...
is not a discussion! He's like, he committed genocide!
They're like, he's kind of like a good... Like, he's always out for himself, but, like, you know, he's still kind of working for the... It's like, no, I think he's... just happens to be on the good guy's side.
That's basically it.
But he's a monster. Like, he is a fucking monster!
Well, let's not forget the conditions under which he was introduced in his fight to Ishida. Like, seriously.
I mean, let's not forget, like, this dude carries around his daughter for the sole purpose of reviving himself should the need ever arise, and otherwise she's basically like a fucking, like, you know, fucking stay quiet or I'll smack you kind of, like, in an abusive relationship. You're like, oh, this guy's just the worst.
Ugh. Also, he did kill his own followers by turning them into bombs at one point.
Yeah, I was going to say, he uses his own squad minions as test subjects.
So he's kind of an asshole. Like, a really big asshole.
He is
a bad guy.
Yeah, I was going to say, didn't he do something with fucking, what's his name? Toshiro? Whatever 10th squad captain is.
Yeah, it's Toshiro.
Toshiro, yeah. Like, he
turned them into his own zombies.
Yeah, so it's like... Man, this dude like just can't go an arc without doing something horrible, and you're like, "What?
Why would anyone?" By the way, what happened to them?
I don't know, Nick.
Where are they? Are they just dead now? Have they joined Unohana?
It's gonna be like Grimmjow, where God, I'm terrified of me to mention this, but a year from now, they'll just show up again and be like, "Oh, okay." So
and Mary be like, "All right."
Oh,
silly me, I forgot about that.
We're burying the lead, though, Nick. There's something just so glorious.
Okay, Yukaku and Yumichika are like, man, that Mayuri guy's an asshole. He sure is a real piece of work. And Emma says, yes, I hope so. And Yumichika says, what's that supposed to mean? And Emma says, exactly as I said. Well, that was enlightening. Thanks for that conversation, Kubo.
It was another fantastically written conversation.
He realized that he couldn't spread the title across two whole pages this time.
Which baffles me, because I feel like that's his wheelhouse at this point.
So he was just like, okay, I'll write this stupid conversation and put it in a half page instead. Anyway, so Mayuri talks to himself a bit more, because Birdinas can't talk back, and Zaraki is paralyzed, so he can't talk either. Everyone else is fine.
Why can't he talk back?
And talking to himself, and talking to himself, and talking to himself, and talking to himself. Shut up! Blah, 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 Quincy, blah, blah, sacrifice. Precious victories are always achieved with precious sacrifices. Touching sacrifice, experimental subject. Blah, 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 blah. Perdita's cloak rips apart. He's a hand. A hand with an eye that has two pupils.
Oh, God. God, I don't know what to say about this. Like, what was your instant reaction the first time you saw it?
How the fuck did this happen?
Like, mine was, I was just laughing. Like, I could not look at it and be like, oh, of course he's a fucking hand. Like,
we introduced the Ryo's right arm, the one that Ukitake had the fucking contract with. This is the left arm.
Which has just been walking around as a fucking Quincy for a while, apparently.
Why is the Soul King's left hand have... Why is it a Quincy? How did this happen? What... Wasn't the right arm, like, a nefarious sort of evil spirit? Like, worshipped as a god that people could make contracts with? And this one's just been walking around in a hoodie this whole time?
Like, a giant... Like, it's a giant hand that has just been hanging around the hood being like, yeah, I'm fucking... I'm C, the compulsionary. I'm just, you know, do-do-do-do-do-do. And I'm just gonna hang around and do whatever. And eventually he's like, ah, shit, I guess I'll reveal my full form because you pissed me off. I'm a hand that apparently has, like, fucking a hair trigger temper and a very low self-opinion of myself. I don't like being insulted, so I go nuts and rip off my hoodie.
The only thing that I can assume from this is that it's trying to push the idea that Jubak and the Soul King are far more closely tied than initially assumed because of the stuff that you know, Jubak talked about to Ryo. I believe he called him his father, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
All that stuff. So, whatever. It's a hand, and it's been obeying Jubak this whole time, and it can spread out nerve endings through the air while Mayuri keeps on fucking talking to itself.
It's like, who would have thought when this group got introduced, like, yes, you will be introduced to my elite units, Thor, Furry Cowboy Hat Man, Master Hand, and Askanok Lavar. Like, that's the normal dude in this group. That's our straight man, is Askanok Lavar. Like, it's like, you couldn't, like... Last week I was like, I hope it's something crazy. And seeing it now, like, it's like, oh, you lived up to it and so much more, Kubo. I have no idea what's happening. You've made me forget the other part of this that I was hoping would get addressed. You're like, hey, do you think any of the Quincy's are going to address the fact that this fucker is the guy responsible for the almost complete genocide of their species? And it's like, no, we don't have to address that because he's fighting the one motherfucker who can't talk. No one else, he can't bring it up because he's a fucking hand.
Oh, hello, Ryo's left arm. I'm not left arm. Perdita's arm.
Like, I don't know. What
an amazing character this is. It says, no, that not name. Baradina's name.
Like, why did they...
I am Han.
Why did they give it a stupid name, then? Like, why didn't they just...
fucking no!
Oh, man. And it's like... It's weird, because the way they draw it, you don't see the bottom of the hand ever. But we do see... Or maybe we do. Maybe that is the bottom of the hand there.
It spread itself, like, out seemingly infinitely, and also into the area surrounding it.
Okay, yeah, we are seeing actually the very bottom of it. So it is just, like, a hand that gets to what I think is, like, a little past the elbow, and then it just is severed. And just, I guess, I don't know how it's been walking about, I guess on its nerves, which seems really painful. There's so many questions you could ask. It's like, I know it's manga. I know this shit's weird, but I'm like, this is a level of weird I hadn't been expecting in the series as of quite yet.
It's one of those things where it's like, you know, Kubo doesn't prepare you for the super weird stuff until he does it, you know? You don't get acclimated to, okay, you know, I can expect weird things from this series. I can expect there to be weird hand monsters and stuff. No, to this point, basically to this arc, almost every single character that Kubo has introduced has been either a monstrous hollow or it's been a super pretty person. Like, that's basically it.
Yeah.
Like, you could argue it was like, oh, Yami wasn't pretty. Yeah, but he was, like, humanoid until he turned into a hollow monster thing. And it's like, those were the two. Hollow monster or pretty person. And now you get to the Quincy's, and they're all the fuck over the place.
Like, you get some, break you get the some, jar.
You get some that are very pretty people, like Jugo. You get some that dress eccentrically as hell. You get
Master Masculine.
Yeah, you get Baz B, who's got a mohawk in like the thousands years, you know, like really weird. And also they wore ties back then. That still bothers me. And so you get a lot of, you know, pretty people. You get a cyborg in GB9. You get an arm. You get a brain in a jar.
It's just
all the fuck over the place.
You know what I want now, Nick? I want Bleach to end, and I want a sequel, like a prequel series to come out, which is like the 10 years before this shit happened, and it was just watching the fucking Vandenreich, like, hang about and just, like, be an army unit. Because like, I want a console meeting where one chair is occupied by a brain in a jar, and another one's a fucking hand, and then next to them's a professional wrestler with this fucking belly button spawn ring announcer. Like, I just need them all in a room and find out what the fuck they talk about when it's not taking over the Soul Society. Just want them to be like, so did you see the Daily Show last night? Look, I thought it was pretty good overall. Steve Carell showed up. That was pretty cool. Like, fine, I'm done. I'm talking to you with fucking hand.
Perdinus is like, Trevor, Noah, not host, John Stewart, host.
Just say yes, we get it. We know your opinion.
Oh my god, we know you're not good with change. Oh.
You're going to have to get used to the fact that you haven't gotten used to Jimmy Fallon as the Tonight Show host. You're going to have to get used to it at some point.
Jay Leno!
There was someone in between. Well, technically, you're right, but you forgot Conan. Anyway, they're both awful, so just get over it.
Okay. Anyway, Bleach is stupid. Newsflash. Let's move on to Fairy Tale.
Oh, God. I really hope we have something better to move on to, but that's the back end of this series. All right, so chapter 447, The Fight to Flee, Nick.
Yes.
And our cover page is the, I forget what their actual family name is. I know they're siblings, but...
Do they have a family name? Oh, Strauss. Strauss.
Wow, holy shit, yes. That's a pull. The elf, yes. The Strauss family.
I outdid you on a fairy tale name!
Was that a thing? Was I always good at fairy tale names instead of
you? No, but you've been reading it for far longer.
Okay, I was like, I feel like I don't put much passion into remembering things in this series. So last week, Natsu punched out Desert King, and the Fairy Tail members were kind of squared off against him. He's, again, one of the 12 emperors. I forget what their actual name is. They might actually be 12 emperors.
Spriggan.
The Spriggan 12, something like that. So he's one of the 12 strongest people, and Desert King, Ajeel's like, it's been a while since I've had to punch that good. Give me more of that! And they have a little bit of a fight here. Not much. Basically, he just summons kind of a whole bunch of sand and sucks everybody up. And Makarov, Nick, he grows really, really big.
Oh my god. This is the stupidest fucking thing. He's like, okay, guys, I'm going to protect you. Get close to my chest, and I will hold you here so tightly, I'm practically suffocating you.
And I'm just going to stand here.
And then he just summons a gigantic wave of sand that surrounds Makarov. And he's like, no, I'll protect you. And everyone's just like, fucking move.
His plan is like, don't worry.
I won't stand here.
I won't let you get taken by the sand. What are you going to do? I guess I'll just stand here and then the sand eventually kills me and then you'll get taken by the... Look, I didn't think it all through. I can grow really big. That's my power. I really wanted to use it. I'm sorry. So yeah, as you said, Ajeel summons an enormous tidal wave of sand, which is super threatening, Nick. Super duper threatening. How is Makarov...
He does summon a fuck lot of sand.
It's hard to, like, have scale for it, though, because I have no idea where we're at. It's just, like, that's a lot of sand.
Well, and also, like, he doesn't get to do anything with it.
Yeah, I was like, and I'm gonna bet by the end of this chapter it's been destroyed. And everyone's kind of noting, like, oh god, you know, what's gonna happen? You know, Makarov's like, don't worry, I'll get you through. And then, of course, from the sky, lightning zaps it away as we see Laxus on top of some giant ship. And he actually hasn't changed all that much over the year. He's basically just slicked his hair back.
Yeah.
And we see the rest of the group of the B team or whatever are in a ship. And Natsu notes, he's like, hey, wait, how can Gajio and Laxus be on it and not puking?
Oh, this is the stupidest.
They're like, because we built a ship that is custom for Dragon Slayers. You're like, what does that mean? And they're like, well, we realized that at some point this could prove a story narrative detriment, so we had to have a reason for why they won't get sick in some sort of transportation.
It wasn't you don't have time to think about that, because two of the guys up there are immediately like, oh, Wendy, you're looking...
It's so weird. Like,
he's sticking his tongue out while he says it.
I mean, look, Bixxo's a freak. He's always been a freak. He's a weird dude. He fucking always has his tongue out. He's a fucking weirdo. But even Siegfried's like, thus the little girl grows up. And you're like, no, she didn't. I don't like...
Wendy's just like, no, I haven't grown at all.
I haven't been comparing her breast sizes. I don't know why you would either, but even then, like, no one changed in this fucking year. It took a year for Loxus to fucking comb his hair back. Like, why are you trying to make a big deal out of this? All you've done is...
your poor physical changes before the time skip.
Like,
she got her hair and grew it back.
She wasn't of age before the time skip. She's not of age now. Stop commenting on her breasts. You're up in a fucking spaceship. How can you even see her breasts to judge? Why?
Like, wait a minute. They're wearing swimsuits. Must get the binoculars. Must check out Wendy's chest right now.
Like, I shouldn't be surprised, because fucking everyone in this series is just a filthy fucking pervert, but... Yeah, like, such a weird moment. Like, and you'd expect Evergreen to be like, ew, you fucking monsters. She's a child. But no, she's just like, doesn't everybody grow up after a year? In which case, I wanted some, like, a fifth person to show up in this scene and just be like, no, actually, a lot of adults stop growing after a while and eventually start shrinking.
They pull out, like, a bunch of charts that explain human maturity.
Yeah, they're just like, look, apparently I know fucking human anatomy didn't get very far in this world, but just to explain, you don't... I know his power is to grow bigger, but as you'll see, that's pretty fucking worthless anyway, and not how everyone else works. You actually just shrink, eventually. It's pretty sad. Hulk Hogan used to be, like, 6'5", he's, like, 6'2", now. Also racist, but that's that has nothing to do with age. That's...
tell you something,
that's
brother.
Just the South.
The Hulkster's been feeling pretty inadequate since he stopped roiding up, brother.
So, I make up for it by shouting the N-word out a lot.
I'm the Great White Hope, dude.
Oh, man. Alright, so...
Anyway.
Geo's like, you're not gonna run away. And Loxus is like, running. All we're doing is going home. And I wanted Geo to be like, but then he gets blasted by lightning.
Oh,
so
God,
he,
it's so huge.
He can't. But of course, Luxus has this great line of, we won't want to be late for dinner.
What the fuck is he thinking about?
Which I'm like, could you brought dinner on the ship? Like, I don't know what this... I don't know what you're talking about. None of this is cool.
Luxus is just like... completely somewhere else right now. He's just thinking of all the shit he's got to do. He's like, these assholes just showed up. They were talking about how they fucking spent time at the hot springs for no reason.
Like, he was...
Pulled me away from fucking marathoning Orange is the New Black. I've got dinner waiting in the oven right now. And then once I'm done with that, you know, gotta fucking file my taxes. Gotta fucking... Jesus.
I have to make food.
All of you.
Yeah, like, I have to... I know I'm saying we're going home to make dinner. I have to prepare my meals for the week. I have a long week ahead of me, and I like to prepare my chicken and spinach ahead of time.
You guys just had to come and get me. He's like, oh, you're the one with the station wagon, Loxus. Gotta do the road trip with us, man. Come on, man. Be a bro, dude. You can't just fucking leave us be like this. It's so important. You gotta come with us, man. You're the only one who knows how to drive the thing, because none of us ever learned how to do a stick shift. God, I hate you all!
And then you just found a fucking ship that doesn't bother Dragon Slayers at all anyway, so what the fuck was the point?
You didn't need my station wagon at all! You just wanted me to zap lightning so that you guys could sit on your fucking asses and check out Wendy. And what the fuck is wrong with you, by the way? She's 13, or however the fuck old she is. I don't fucking know. That weird time travel bullshit. The point is, you're perverts!
The point is, all of you are freaks! And you're part of my team, which is really reflecting poorly on me as a manager.
Maybe I shouldn't have betrayed Fairy Tail that one time, temporarily.
I like the idea also that, like, he, like, watched Commando over on the way, like, on the way over, and he's like, oh, I need some sweet one-liners, like...
He's practicing his Austrian accent while he says this, dinner's getting cold.
Yeah. We don't want to be late for dinner! Like, that's... Nice, that sucked. No! So they fly away. And Gio's like, were those guys for real? And then, I guess this is supposed to be the, what was the number one mage in Fairy Tales continent? Because it's just some old guy. Seemingly another member of the Spriggan 12 shows up. And he presumably, he protected Gio from that attack with some barrier. Which, again, goes a real long way to making this group seem any kind of threat whatsoever. If he needed to be protected from fucking Laxus being like, zap, like with his fucking arms crossed from 80 feet in the air, like, zap.
Like, Agil does at least say, he's like, what, you're saying that I would have died from that? Come the fuck on.
Yeah. Well, he's still kind of scared into, like, the previous page.
He does seem very, very surprised, but Laxus has at least been established in the past to be at a level above even, you know, Urza and Natsu and stuff.
So. Yeah. Till friendship gets involved, then all bets are off.
Also, apparently, Xerath was watching the whole time.
Yeah, and then fucking we close in on Xerath, and he's like, it has begun, Natsu. Begun, the Clone Wars has.
You know, honestly, that should have probably been the end of the chapter, too.
It should have. Well, no, Nick. We got that. This essential moment where everyone in Fairy Tail is reunited, and, of course, you know, fucking Dragon Slayer is like, I don't need to puke! This bullshit ship's great! And Makarov looks around.
Oh, everyone is here.
Sees everybody there, and he's like, you're the best family a guy's ever had, Fairy Tail. We've completed the circle of what the fuck was the point of the last 2 months of this series. I thought maybe it was going to be a moment where they were trying to escape, and then fucking Xerath, or maybe this, you know, head commander, like, someone just goes out and, like, fucking spiral laser beam finger blasts fucking Makarov through the heart and, like, looks like they killed him, quote-unquote, but he wouldn't actually be dead. But at least get that idea of, like, we came to save you, we tried to pull you out, but, oh, they're just too strong anyway, and they still got him. No, they're out. Like, they just took him and fucking bolted home. And that's, like, it's not going to be the end of things. I presume they're going to strike back, but it's the moment where you're like, what was the point of this? Why did we spend, like, 2 months traveling over here when you just grabbed him and left?
You know what I would love? I this is never going to happen. What I want to happen, though, is for sometime soon, Laxus to take Makarov to the side and be like, what the fuck were you thinking?
You were fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, you...
You didn't tell any of us where you went.
You went on this stupid plan, you wasted a year not finding anything out, and then you found out that you made the wrong decision. And then just, like, bring it all home by saying, like, you forgot the true value of the guild just like I did. And just fucking ream into him. Because no one is going to call Makarov out on this bullshit.
Like, no one's gonna be like, oh, we need to have a fucking parade where we all do a hand thing so that we know that we don't all hate you. Everyone's just like, no, you know, it's fucking great you're back, despite the fact you monumentally fucked up everything for us for a while.
So, I just want someone to call him out on it. And honestly, Laxus is probably the best person for it, because he's the biggest douchebag in the group.
Well, he's also his grandson, too, and he had, said, he had his own moment where he was an asshole, and he got called out on it rightfully. I mean, he was actually a pretty enormous asshole, because he almost killed an entire town in his anger. But still, it's like, you kind of fucked up your real big, Makarov.
Oh, and also,
if Dorenbolt didn't have the ability to fucking teleport enormously long distances somehow and get you out, I mean, you'd be dead.
Well, and also, you know, if you were to do that, it would show how much he has grown.
Well, hold on, Nick. All of them are fully grown. Yeah, they just can't show it all until friendship.
I mean, you know, look at the fucking D cups that Happy has now, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they're all... Look, Nick, they're all growing. Physically, though. emotionally, all these
continuously.
Characters.
Continuously.
Yeah, forever. It's a giant Mobius strip of human growth.
I am surprised that Makarov is not 800 feet tall all the time.
Yeah, that's actually, that's because of his magic. Otherwise, when you get to be old, you're just 100 feet tall with
his magic actually ears. Just restores him to his normal size. Oh, God.
It was a
fucking stupid.
This was such a waste of a chapter. This is a waste of, like, 3 months.
This is a waste of several chapters.
Oh, man.
Let's do it. Food Wars, Shokugeki no Soma, where stuff actually happened.
Thank God.
Chapter 129, Lion versus Lion. As Soma last time revealed his giant meatball mapo tofu. So Mr. Tomita, is very curious about this, as he has basically been the one first to be served. And Soma's like, okay, yeah, you know, go ahead and dig in, but, you know, first taste it before you break up the meatball. And so he dines. He's like, oh, it's so good, it's yummy, it's, yeah, it's the mapo tofu I've eaten and loved for years at, you know, your dad's restaurant, it's so wonderful, it goes perfectly with the noodles, it's great. And then he looks over at Kuga's restaurant, and so Kuga is still just like, eh, whatever, yo, here you go, Kuga's authentic Sichuan mapo tofu. And Tomita is like, oh, I don't know if you can come even close to rivaling the other restaurant's impact, though. You know, their booth, their food, it's all so great. From setup to service to presentation, they're perfect. But Soma just says, well, no, because satisfying every customer 100% every time is a hard thing to do, even for pros that have been in the business for 10 or more years. And we see a whole bunch of people who are not so happy over the Kuga booth. There's a guy who is sick of waiting for food. There are people who are sick of waiting in line. And there are some waiters who are just coming over to people and being like, hey, can you just, like, leave? Because we've got a lot of people waiting in line, trying to rush things along and stuff. And basically, the booth's fucking popularity is starting to be their undoing because there's so many people waiting to get their food. And so someone points out, you know, I mean, I've been watching how he runs things every day, but it took until just recently for me to notice what the problem with Kuga's restaurant is. And at that moment, he says, okay, Mr. Tomita, dunk the meatball into the mapo tofu and break it open. And he does so, and the fucking, like, briefcase from Pulp Fiction appears. There's just this, like, this glowing light from inside the meatball emerges, and Mr. Tomita's like, oh, it's the moon! The moon came out! Which...
He's like, wait a minute. No, that's just curry sauce! You lied to me!
Like, I never told you it was the moon. Yes, you did!
I was under the belief it's a moon! You put a moon in my meatball now!
No, wait. It smells better than the moon. Never mind!
Soma just dunks a moon pie into it. He's like, there you go. He's like, oh, that's disgusting. Have you had those before?
Well, he's like, oh, it's curry! There's curry inside the meatball! And, yeah, Soma's like, yes! See, now's the best time to eat it, so come on, dig in. And Tomita's like, oh, I have to take my clothes off right now. And it was like, no, just stop. No, don't do that. No, I know it feels like you're naked, but you don't have to get naked. Please stop.
It's surprising that we haven't seen this in a while, right? The fucking clothes exploding.
It has been a little while, yeah. So yeah, his clothes basically blow off in ecstasy, and he's like, oh, it's so wonderful, the spices and the seasonings, the savory goodness is stoking straight into me all the way down to my bones! And Soma explains his dish, saying that basically, he's got gelatin to firm it up, wrapped in the pork bun meat and then cooked, and once it eventually crumbles, all that savory curry goodness seeps out into the mapo tofu noodles. It's the new and improved Yukihira's number 2. I dub it Countdown Curry Mapo Noodles. So,
Nick, how hungry are you?
Well, I just ate, so not very.
I just ate. I mean, I also went for a run in between. Man, like, as soon as this podcast's done, I'm like, I think Wendy's is still open. Like, they don't make anything like this, but it's like, fucking, I need something.
I mean, I like the conclusion reached here. Is like, you know, so he's got the noodles so that everything, you know, works together, but he's also got the pork bun worked in there in addition to the mapo tofu to compete with Kuga, and yeah, it's cool. It all comes together. All the dishes we saw him working on during the arc, they come together.
So I need to just Harrisburg pork bun. I'm hoping that someone in Harrisburg makes fucking pork buns.
What would it be like if when you serve one of those anyway? It would probably be like incredibly disappointing, like, right? Because you can't exactly like serve that thing for $5.
Well,
at a fast food restaurant.
I mean, what quality pork are we talking about?
Actually, I guess
a lot of those ingredients are not that expensive.
I think that it's just a matter of the fact that they wouldn't be able to like use those ingredients in anything else. So that the cost to take such a thing on would ruin it.
That and the preparation time seems extensive. Like, I feel like it takes a little bit to fucking fashion meatballs filled with the curry. Like, because if you get one that's wrong and someone's like, break into it and the moon comes out, you're like, that's a shitty moon. Just all crumbled together. You're like, all right, well, fuck you. You didn't have to put one star on Yelp just because the fucking moon didn't come out, dickhead.
He's probably got to have like a whole bunch of stuff like being prepared before the order comes in and stuff.
Yeah. I am kind of hungry for it, though.
So anyway, so the meatball breaks open, the curry comes out, and it was like, oh, the curry's so good, and it starts to draw a whole ton of customers from Kuga's line, and a bunch of its helpers are like, oh, he stole half the line right there! And Kuga's like, come the fuck on, guys. It takes a dozen of us trained perfectly to keep this restaurant going, and there's no way the two of them in that dinky little cart will be able to keep up with that much business. Just watch, they're going to collapse under their own weight. And sure enough, the orders start pouring in. People are asking for a whole bunch at a time, and Megumi is starting to panic, but someone says, no, just hold on, he should be showing up any time now. And as it turns out, we get some explanation on what happened, I guess last chapter, or maybe the week before, when Soma handed his key to a mystery person. So, basically, Soma is talking to this person and says, I need some extra hands on the day I dropped the gauntlet on Kuga, and you're not helping anyone else, right? So could you help me? And as it turns out, it's Subaru Mimasaka, who? Yeah, he was basically one of the first, like, real, like, villainous students in the series. But since then, he and Soma basically have buried the hatchet. He was Soma's semifinals opponent in the tournament. So he would have been in the arc, like, basically just before you started reading.
Oh, like, just right in, like, the chapter before we started into it. Like, oh, and now. Oops. Yeah. Sorry.
His whole thing is that...
He's a copycat, right?
Yeah. Well, he's fucking awesome, because basically he perfectly copies someone's mannerisms and really gets into understanding who they are as a person and predicts everything that they're going to do in the match against him, and then he'll perfectly replicate whatever dish they're preparing, except he'll take it a step further than they can, so that then his dish will basically be the same, it'll just be superior. So everyone fucking hates him, and the judges are like, this is bullshit, but objectively you have the better dish, so I guess you win.
What a fuckhead. Good on you, though.
Yeah. So his whole thing is, he does image training and stuff, and we see that the reason why someone gave him his key is so that he could perfect his image training in a good place. And so we see some of the people in the Polaris dorm, like, going into Yukihira's actually, some people from Yukihira's hometown, and so the guy went into the Yukihira restaurant and just acted like Soma for a whole long time. And he's even doing stuff like, oh, I'm going to make Kuga-senpai cry uncle and stuff. And then in the present, he even does Soma's line about him being the senpai by about 10 years. And Megumi's got this weird look on her face, and so just like, okay, come on, get to fucking work.
I like this guy, Nick. I'm a big Mimasaka fan. Mimasaka?
You can call him Subaru, and then he'll be a car.
Subaru.
Yeah.
Yeah, he could be Subaru, and then, never mind, it's Sakazuki. I was thinking Suzuki is one of the items in One Piece, but that's slightly different. Damn.
So
those two could have formed a great buddy comedy, though.
Kuga's thinking to himself, he's like, oh, the meatball. He's added several twists to it, but at its core, it's incredibly similar to a certain dish common to Taiwan and certain regions of the mainland. A meat stew that features enormous meatballs called Shizito Lion's Head Stew. And he thinks to himself, oh, this kid was supposed to be a weak little kitten, but in the 2 days since I crushed him on day one, that bastard has morphed into a raging lion. And we get this awesome full-page spread of the two of them squaring off, and each of them is represented by a lion with their hairstyle.
Isn't it weird, though, like, we got a scene very similar to this in Black Clover this week, of, like, two people doing it, and one was a lion.
And one had a lion, yeah, yeah.
And this one, I'm like, oh, man, these lions are scarier, though. And they're not real. Like, your fucking things would presumably be real manifestations of lions, but these would scare me a little bit more. These are screwer lines, Nick.
So that was Shokugeki no Soma. What did you think of that, man?
It was a good chapter. We're on to a good chunk of series this week that were pretty good. I mean, we'll have to get through Torugo, but this is where, like, I'm like, ah, good. That's, it took me a little bit to remember. I was like, ah, this was a good week for Jump this week. And we're digging into it now.
Right. My Hero Academia, number 53, from Todoroki to Ida. And Todoroki is right, and he is using fire and ice, and as Deku notes, holy crap, you're left! And Todoroki is like, you know, man, it took me a few seconds to figure it out, but that group text to everyone that you sent with nothing but your location, because sending out a totally meaningless message isn't your style, I realized it meant I'm in trouble, help. But don't worry, in just a few more minutes, the pros will be here too. So... that's cool. You know, Deku really thinking on his feet, not just like reaching out to someone he knew was in the area, but just going straight to, this is my location, so that he could get right into fighting with Stain.
Anybody help me, yeah.
So Todoroki lashes out with a wave of fire, which Stain is forced to dodge, and then he uses his ice powers to get all three heroes behind him as well. So then he can get them away. And, Deku says, oh, make sure that you don't let him draw blood, because he paralyzes his opponents by ingesting their blood. That's how he got us. So Todoroki's like, okay, then I'll just keep my distance, and a knife immediately whizzes by him and cuts his cheek. So Stain not wasting any fucking time. Yeah. And Stain rushes in to, I guess, take advantage of Todoroki's wound. He tries to slash with his knife, and the knife that he actually did cut Todoroki with kind of bounces around, and he's like, oh, he's gonna try and catch it, so I may make sure he can't get it. But meanwhile, Stain is like trying to lick up the blood from the wound he drew. So gross.
And he's got this creepy tongue that's just like all warty and shit.
Disgusting.
Also, you gotta think, this dude's thing is, like, I consume other people's blood. Like, that's just, he's gotta be getting fucking diseases all over the place.
And maybe that's why his tongue is all nasty.
Yeah.
But, you know, so he does catch, he draws another sword, and Todoroki is doing his very best just to keep the guy at bay. Meanwhile, Ida's like, oh, what are you guys doing? I've inherited my brother's name. I have to do this. He's mine! And Todoroki just says... inherit his name. That's weird, because the Ingenium I know never made faces like that. Guess your family's also got a dark side to it. Just really fucking talking down to him.
This chapter be like, I'm gonna be sassy to you now.
Yeah, really. Yeah. And at that moment, Deku, still straining, suddenly manages to barely move slightly. Todoroki summons this giant wall of ice to try and defend himself. That doesn't work out too well, because as Stain points out, as he just cuts it to shreds, you know, you're just obstructing your own vision when you're up against an opponent faster than yourself, so that's not a very good strategy. So Todoroki's like, oh yeah, really? Well, I've got fire and, oh god, my arm. A bunch of, like, razor blades just sticking to his forearm.
Yeah, he's just like, I'm gonna show you what, shink, 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 ow! Ow!
That really hurts!
You're a dick! You didn't wait for me to stop.
I'm supposed to have badass one-liners.
I watched Commando on the way over.
Stain,
we gotta finish this, because we gotta get home for dinner.
Stain tries to attack Todoroki from above, diving down from a large distance, but Deku suddenly leaps up into the air and attacks him and just, like, starts dragging him around. And so everyone's like, oh my god! And Deku's like, somehow I can move again just fine!
Awesome!
So Todoroki's like, oh, maybe his ability has a time limit, and the hero that they initially save is like, no, I mean, he was the last to get hit, and I still can't move. And Stain thinks to himself, oh, this kid must be, oh. And he gets himself away from Deku, And Todoroki suddenly starts coming up with theories on what's going on. He's like, okay, there's three possible explanations. Either the effect is weaker the more people he uses it on, or it's about how much blood he gets, or its effectiveness depends on blood type. And so immediately people start announcing, like, oh, I'm blood type B. And he's like, and I'm blood type A. And Stain's like, shit, they figured it out. And we get this caption that explains that his quirk is called Blood Curdle. By licking his opponent's blood, he can incapacitate them for up to 8 minutes. It is most effective against B-type blood, then AB, then A, and finally O. And Stain's happens to be B-type B. So, very kind of like Japanese culture kind of thing. Because, I don't know what it is, just like Japanese culture is like all about the fucking blood types and what that says about personality and stuff.
Do you know your blood type?
It is B negative, I think.
I feel really dumb for not knowing my blood type. And I feel like I've gone into the doctor's office before and looked at my charts, like, now I'm going to remember my blood type. And then, like, a week later, I'm like, what is it? I know the entire fucking Gabumon Digimon line. I can't remember my blood type if you fucking tattooed it into my palm.
I'm probably B because my mom is O and my dad is B. And so O is recessive to both A and B. So B means... That means that I can only be types B or O. Although I don't know about the positives and negatives and stuff, because that's actually a different genotype. So there you go.
But that's pretty important, though, right? Like,
it's important in terms of donating and receiving blood and stuff, but only really under emergency conditions.
Now, do they...
Because if you give blood, then they'll just figure it out later.
That's what I was going to say. If I go in and they're like, what's your blood type? And I'm like, you tell me.
And then they'll still be fine. Like, they'll just... I guess it just, like, saves them a step, if you can tell them, basically.
Wouldn't you want to check them anyway?
Because I've donated blood, and I still don't really know my blood types.
Well, yeah, I feel like they'd have to double check it. Like, what if I go in and I'm just like, I have AB blood, wink, wink, and they're like, what are you, like a fucking supervillain? Like, why are you trying to get one over on the blood donation people? What do you don't get more orange juice than a cookie for fucking being the best blood type.
Here. You get 2 bottles of Gatorade.
Yay! And I'm like, good, I'm going to need it, because I hate needles and I start to faint if I have them in me, so this is going to keep me up. Yeah, I scream, ah! Every time they're going to put the needle in, they're like, all right, sir, ah!
Look, if you have a fear of needles, then we just don't take your blood, but it's okay.
Stop screaming, at least. Ah!
We just don't give you the sticker. No!
I want the sticker, it's why I came here.
Yeah, but there's, like, all this, like, superstition in Japan, and I think other Eastern cultures, about how blood type reflects personalities and stuff. It's all bullshit.
That's the horoscope, isn't it?
They do have a horoscope, too.
Oh, okay.
But it's essentially, yeah, like, you know, your horoscope in the newspaper is like, oh, if you have blood type B, then that means... it's absolutely...
I should start now when I'm on my... online dating profile. I'm like, hey girl, how you doing? I like that photo of you. I think I'm B plus.
Yeah,
I'm not 100% positive. Don't make me check. I scream when the needles get close to me. Anyway, hear my digits. They're like, why do you talk like that when you write emails?
Well, yeah, occasionally in manga you'll see something like, see someone, you know, have a note about their personality, and, you know, someone's like, oh, I guess it's because I'm blah blah type blood, or someone will say, it's like, oh, you must be blah blah type blood, or whatever. It means absolutely nothing. It's exactly the same as if I were to say, it's like, oh, I'm Aries, and that means that I have this type of personality, or that means I don't get along with this type of personality. It's all just superstition.
So, like, basically it's about as accurate if I went on Facebook and did one of those, like, what element are you quiz, and then, like, afterwards I'm just like, so are you a fire? Because I'm an earth, and fire and earth are not as compatible as you think.
Well, at least and those mom's are based like, on... At least
did those you are based me on. Happy birthday? And I'm like, sorry, Mom, fires don't wish happy birthdays.
At least those are based on an actual personality-based, you know, survey, as opposed to just random things like date of birth and genetic blood type and shit, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, so Deku was like, oh, you've got all this blood exposed, Todoroki, so I'll draw his attention. You provide rear support and stuff. And they're both like, okay, yeah, we'll protect them. And Stain has this really weird look on his face, like, kind of disappointed. And he's like, ah, taking me on 2-on-1. Well, at least you're not naive.
I think it's supposed to be intimidating because his pupils are now gone, but it's hard to take him...
His pupils aren't gone, they're just very hard to see.
Yeah, they're very blended into the hard stroke of his eyes. But because he has no nose, it makes the rest of his face look blank, mm-hmm. I think. But yeah, he's getting kind of perturbed.
So we actually get some internal narration by Todoroki referring to Ida here, as he just thinks to himself, it's like, oh, you know, ever since your brother got taken out, I've had my eye on you because all that building resentment was written on your face. I know that when I see it. And I know just how much grudges like that can cloud a person's vision. I was shocked how fast my mom went from crying and apologizing to smiling and offering forgiveness. I've been able to move on, eyes unclouded, because she said she wanted me to be happy, to save people. At any point before that, I never would have dreamed of choosing my dad's agency for my internship. It's not that I forgave him. I doubt I ever will. It's just that I want to witness and experience for myself what makes him the number two hero out there. Just like before, the hero killers appeared in Hosted City, blah, 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 blah. No matter how much of a scumbag he is, I had to see for myself the decision-making intuition of the, that's made people label him number two. It was so simple, all of it. So simple, yet I couldn't see it. Your power is your own. That simple, single thought. So, yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's a real fucking awesome kind of scene we get, too.
You know, it's nice to see. He's like, okay, you know, there you go. I mean... He was so obsessed with getting, you know, this kind of weird vengeance against his father, and then all he really needed to do was to kind of make amends with his mother, and then it's like, okay, well, you know, I made up with her, and I shouldn't spite my dad by doing this. I should, you know, actually follow my dream. And
I should be better than him than living into this cycle of hatred.
So now we see that, you know, Todoroki is in this, you know, actual hero's position, and Ida has fallen into this pit, and Todoroki recognizes that because he's just crawled out of it. So, because he's now focusing on the wrong thing and stuff. Mm-hmm. So Stain, like, I don't know what the fuck happens to him. I think that he might have a mask now. Either way, he looks scary. He's got, like, this, like, all black... like slant-eyed face, and he's just darting around. He's way faster than before. He cuts it into Deku's ankle, and Ida is just like, oh, I can't take it. And Todoroki shuts out, oh, if you want to stop this, then stand up. And Ida just thinks to himself, oh, I've just got one thing to say to you. And he's still thinking to himself, I'm Injin, the hero who's going to beat you. And at this point, you know, basically Deku is already down. And Stain finally licks up the blood from his sword, so Todoroki is helpless and paralyzed in front of him. He cuts through the last barrier Todoroki has and is leaping into action. And at this, from this point, it looks like, well, no one's going to be able to help him. Maybe the pros will show up.
Gran Torino?
Maybe Ida will manage to shake up the paralysis because they indicated that he would have the second, be the second least effective one affected by the paralysis after Deku. So yeah, who knows?
Very possible. Yeah, I mean, it's a very good chapter this week. Maybe the best chapter of the manga this of rather jump issue. That was the word I'm thinking of. Maybe the best manga of the issue this week. I think really good one. Yeah, it's cool seeing Ida then also kind of basically one arc ago. You know, last big kind of story we had, it was him getting the big speech from Deku, and now he's the one giving it to
Ida, you mean Todoroki,
yeah. So I'm hoping that this becomes like a chain, like next chapter or next arc, Ida's the one giving it to the fucking bird guy, and then bird guy's giving it to fucking Uraraka, and then like Uraraka's giving it to Bakugo, and it just goes in a fucking cycle, just everyone like motivating each other. That'd be sweet.
Alright, let's head on to One Piece, chapter 795, Suicide.
Do you want to mention anything about Nisekoi, by the way? Because Nisekoi actually seems like it's taking that step to, like, all right, we're going to a conclusion now. Because he's basically said to two girls now, like, yeah, not really, an end to you. And put a nail in those coffins. Also,
Marika is trying not to die.
Well, also, the cover this week was borderline pornographic. it's like Marika, it's a color page.
That is a damp dress, girl.
Yeah, she's like fucking gone in the water, it's damp, and it's just like, wow, like, this was excessively pornographic. Not like pornographic, because it's actually done a very, like, I'm trying to think of the word for it, like, but not like quite majestic, but like it's supposed to be more artistic than it is like cheesecake. But I was like, that is very suggestive in its own way, though. But yeah, no, he said basically no to Marika. I think he's
fine. Well, he hasn't actually yet. What happened basically is Marika reveals, I know the truth about you and Chidoke, because seriously, come on. We hang out all the time. Really.
Yeah. Risque. That's the word I'm looking for. Yeah. It's a little risque.
And so basically, you know, she's like, okay, you know, just give me your answer, basically. So presumably he's going to say no in the next one, because of course he is. Also, at the same time as this is going on, Marika has gotten a call from seemingly her mother, and that's probably the actual reason why she's going into action. Seemingly she is going... Seemingly, she is going to have some sort of, like, interference come in, similar to how Yui was supposed to in the last one. But, you know, it does seem like, because, I mean, Nisekoi is 3.5 years old now? Getting close
older,
to 4 years
and
old.
It's definitely, like, a series that you're like, look, I mean, I know the joke of these kinds of series is like, oh, well, it never ends. He never picks a girl. But, I mean... Eventually they do. It's
eventually
not,
they do end. And
this isn't Betty and Veronica. He's eventually going to pick a girl.
And how long? How the fuck long did that last?
Oh, okay. Tulevru.
No, I was looking. Well, Tulevru got interrupted by kidnapping. Kidnapping.
Oh. Oh my.
But I was actually looking up the kind of perennial harem series, which is Love, Hina, and that only lasted 3 years. So...
How long did Ichigo 100% go?
I don't fucking know.
Okay. I'll look that up real quick. We can carry on. We can go to One Piece.
Although, I guess... I think the one that... I guess the longest-lasting harem manga is Oh My Goddess. That's, like, still going, and that's a very long-running one.
Ichigo 100% was also 3 years.
So maybe 3 years is kind of like the standard. Although, Oh My Goddess has been ran from like... Oh, it actually did end recently. Oh My Goddess ran for 25 years, so...
Well, that's terrifying.
That seems like an outlier on the graph there. Anyway. So yeah, maybe it's coming to a close. Maybe not. I don't know. I'm not going to hold my breath for it. But if interesting stuff happens, they'll make that a bit. Anyway... So, One Piece. So, last time, I believe... Yeah, it was last time. I was trying to keep track because One Piece was off last week, I think.
Yes.
One Piece, basically, Fujitora said that he was going to go and arrest Luffy and Law. And this chapter opens up with on him taking a cup off of a die... And so he's like, oh, what's the roll? And it's like, oh, it's a one. And he's like, okay, well, that means that we're not going to arrest anyone tonight. And they're like, but we ran all over the country to track down where they are. Yes, but a man doesn't throw the dice and then quibble with the result after the roll. It's unbecoming.
I like that, like, he's the one acting like it's such a big deal. Everyone's like, you're a fucking asshole. Like, it's just like, that's such a shitty reason. But I think it actually was explained when we first were introduced to Fujitora that he is a gambler.
Yeah.
So this isn't all that unlikely for him to actually risk it all on gambling.
Yeah. But the fact that he decided to gamble at all on this when we haven't seen him gamble on important decisions before indicates that he deliberately gave this chance, basically.
Yeah. This is Two-Face who's just like, well, you know, maybe I won't kill Batman. Like, well, will I kill Batman? Flip, but like, whoa, but will I kill him tonight? Like, just keeps giving him fucking reasons to be like, oh, phew, no, okay, well, all right, guys, let's call it night.
So we catch up with a few people who are just like, where the fuck is Lucy, by the way? I want to thank him. Even if they're pirates or criminals and stuff, we get to actually see a whole bunch of people recovering. I like... seeing some of the cameos in this shot, like the fact that Cavendish is in his "I'm asleep, so my demons come out for him," but he's all chained up. So
yeah, he's got chains all over him.
Like Baby Fi is all cuddled up next to Sai and stuff. Then we go to Rebecca, who is basically gone to Riku, and she's like, "Oh, I can't find Father or Lucy's gang. Where are they?" And Riku says, "That's okay. You know, they're all together, and I'm sure they'll make an appearance here tomorrow. More importantly, Rebecca, do you realize that if I return to being king, you will now be a princess?" And she's like, "Huh? Yes. And like, you will sing songs randomly, and birds will appear on your shoulders and shit." And we'll...
Is that how royalty works, though? Like, are granddaughters princesses?
Because
isn't the next in line, wouldn't it be Viola?
It depends.
Viola's his actual, you know, blood child.
From what I understand, they will justify it in the next chapter, basically.
Okay.
The main issue that's complicated with is the fact that Scarlet kind of ran away from that, if you recall.
Did she? So much of that fucking character because she annoyed me.
Because they moved out to the countryside together, away from
I knew they moved. Yeah, I knew they moved out because it wasn't like an angry thing. Like he wasn't like hiding from her.
No.
Well, from Riku, like, her grandfather,
Riku,
rather.
Riku knew about it, but the kingdom didn't. Basically.
Yeah.
Anyway. So then we cut to the Sunny, where the rain straw hats are.
The twirly hat pirates.
The twirly hat pirates because of Sanji. So there's an argument breaking out. And Caesar Clown's like, "Oh, we just escaped from Big Mom's ship, and now what are we doing back in trouble? I can't believe you guys are..." And Sanji's like, "Shut the fuck up and do what I say, or I'm going to crush your heart." Okay.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not really sure exactly what's going on. It seems as though the party's been separated. However, it looks like Caesar Clown and Chopper and Sanji are on the ship, and everyone else is, I guess, on land nearby. Because they're running away from someone. Nami and Brooke and Momonosuke are. And there's this guy who is riding on an alligator, I think. And he's like, "Oh, where did you hide the woman? And how did you get on this island?" And so on and so forth. And then he overhears someone being like, "Oh, it's time for a rain eruption. Find cover." And I guess a volcano erupts?
Like, we've been introduced to his island. Like, I feel like we missed a chapter or something like
that
where
really
someone
feels like that.
Tells us where this island is or what's happening.
But anyway, it sent out this tremendous wave of water, which is, of course, a huge problem for Brooke and Momonosuke because they're Devil Fruit users. And so they get swept away and they're like, "Ah, help, Nami!" And
well, I do love the line where, like, Brooke's like, "I will protect you from whatever comes. Save me, Nami!" He's just like, "Your fucking powers are so worthless."
So Nami, like, hauls them up onto a tree branch, and as soon as they recover, they're attacked by the guy who's riding on the alligator thing, and he attacks with an ability that he calls Sheep's Horn, although it's hard to see exactly what he does, but anyway, Brooke blocks it.
I think his is supposed to be what kind of looks like the, I don't know if it's lightning or maybe a fire or some kind of like the darker energy it hits, because the smoke is supposed to be the frost from Brooke's ice style.
I don't know.
But I can't see what he has. It almost looks like it's a giant turd, like that Japanese style kind of like triple-tiered spiraling turd thing, or I don't know if that's his fist. Again, this, I'm so confused as to what's happening in these like four fucking pages here.
So Sanji kicks the guy away with his Mutan mallet, and apparently the guy's name was Sheepshead, as said by the other person who's there, who is a scantily clad woman, which of course Sanji makes note of. Duh.
Yeah.
And then she like says to these group behind her, you know, "Oh, Master Sheepshead is down, we've got to retreat." And they're like, "Bob, but we still haven't found the samurai." And she says, "Oh, it's okay. We pushed them this far. There's no sign of him. Report that there was no samurai." And then as the war starts to recede, the Straw Hats start to recover, and they're like, where'd that girl go? What girl? What's going on?
I'm so confused.
Anyway, there's a girl peeking out from behind a tree observing them. Okay. And then they're like, oh, look, Chopper's over there. Okay, wait, let's go.
This, I think this is what confused me so much, is the next two panels don't take place in the same scene. Because they're saying we must hurry, there's not a moment to waste.
No, no, they do take place in the same scene. That's Sheep's Head's belt.
I thought this was Kaido's belt, and this was a tease.
No, that is Sheep's Head's belt.
God, I have no...
So it indicates that he's a member of the Kaido Pirates, which is then cue for our transition to where Kaido is, which is the hideout of the Kid Pirates, where this earthquake...
Now, don't get me wrong! Here's where I'm like, everything starts to make sense, and this is really super fucking awesome, but like, the 6 pages before this, I'm like, I have no clue what's happening.
We definitely went to this scene in the middle of the action with very little explanation. Yeah. So... suddenly, at the Hideout of the Kid Pirates, where we saw that meeting in that long montage where they basically said they were going to take out Red Hair Shanks, suddenly a large person has landed and left a giant hole in the ground. And they're like, whoa, what's going on? Something fell from the sky. Look, over there, it's in the shape of the person. What happened? Who did this? And then we get narration that says, the strong live and the weak die. That is the only rule of this world. And, yeah. So everyone still is like, what the fuck's going on? The impact has capsized the ship, and so on and so forth. It's explained that a few minutes earlier, at the ruined Sky Island balloon terminal...
where Rogue is there.
Yeah. And they're just like, ignore him, holiness.
I do find this, like... Because I said before, I was like, Rogue was the lamest member of the Supernovas. He redeemed himself a little bit in this chapter, and it's just like... This man's gonna jump off. Well, if he's serious, I won't stop him. Amen. And it's just like, ah! Not my problem anymore. Like, such a weird tangential connection to, like, the three other supernovas down there. He's just like, hey, it's your problem now. Amen.
The man claimed that he was searching for a place to die. To speak more on this man, he had tasted defeat as a pirate on 7 occasions and been caught by the Navy or enemy ships no less than 18 times. He was tortured time and time again, and lived as a prisoner, and finally, he attempted suicide. The very rare act of suicide by jumping from a sky island and back to the present. To repeat, this is a man who challenged the Navy and 4 emperors and was caught 18 times and endured over 1,000 tortures. He was sentenced to death 40 times. When he was hanged, the rope snapped. When put under the guillotine, the blade cracked. When skewered, the spear broke. Ultimately, he sank 9 different prison vessels, meaning none of these people were able to kill him. And that included he himself. And at that moment, the guy crawls up out of the hole he made, complaining about having a splitting headache, and that he's not dead. His hobby is suicide, and his name is Kaido, King of the Beasts. And holy fuck, is he huge and awesome looking.
Oh, God. Like, here's the thing. Oda, in recent times, some of his character designs have not been amazing. I think that's why I like the Supernova so much, because they were a group of characters that he kind of clearly gave cool designs to, because he had plans for them. But some, like, his other, like, side enemies and, like, the larger groups, they're not, like, that crazy cool. Some are a little goofy looking to the point where I'm like, it doesn't really do it for me. So I was kind of worried. I was like, man, I hope Kaido looks cool. Because, like, the brief shot we got of Big Mom, I was like, she reached that point. I was like, doesn't seem that big. But Kaido looks fucking pimp. Oh, he looks fucking great with the big horns, the Yakuza tattoo.
I love the weird, wild hair, too.
It's yeah.
Like, it's almost like it turns into a cape.
They have, like, tapered, like a tapered mustache kind of thing. It's very cool.
So... more narration. People say in a one-on fight always, when a one-on-one fight always been on Kaido. Land, sea, and air. Out of every living thing in the world, this pirate is said to be the strongest creature alive. And I like what Kaido says here, too, which is that, old Whitebeard did it right. Well, guess there's no choice but to go through with it. Hurry up, Joker. Prepare for the final battle. Let this dreary world be destroyed. Let's start the greatest war this planet has ever seen.
We definitely need to give this guy a wacky voice, though.
Do we?
I feel like it, Nick. He's going to be an important character. We need to
well,
get
if, you, if you come up with something, let me know.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm excited for this, though. What do you mean, we're going to start the greatest war this planet's ever seen? Like, are we going to get something? I don't know if we ever get anything on the same scale of Marineford, but the idea of, like, a huge arc. Not coming up right now, but maybe like a couple arcs later. It's pretty enticing.
Something to look forward to, I guess.
Yeah. Can we just skip Toriko?
Toriko, Gourmet 333, round
one. I feel bad. I know people like Toriko, but oh, holy shit. I don't know what happened.
There was a robot coffin with crab claws that spat out extinct ingredients. A guy with a mask prepared something. Yuta is going to prepare something in the next fucking chapter, and he's got a giant sword.
And also their cooking thing is, like, run on dead souls of some kind, or, like, food grud. I don't know. It's... Toriko's gotten so weird, and I'm so lost every time I read it nowadays.
Oh, don't you want to have a chapter dedicated to 1mm Yuta? No.
I know he has, like, the 1mm gimmick. If you put me up to the challenge of, like, give me his name, and you gave me 1,000 guesses, maybe eventually I would just, like, spit together syllables that sounded like Yuta. I'd be like, Yuta. And you're like, that's close enough, you got it, Yuta. But otherwise, this is such a background character that you're giving an entire chapter to, and I guarantee we're going to skip over what Zebra and Brunch are doing.
World Trigger.
We're done.
Chapter 111, Yuichi Jin, Part 8. So, we get a flashback that explains why Ozma Squad decided to cover the battle map with snow. The two brats thought it would be fun. And Ozma was like, why not?
Also, I need to retract a previous statement I said. Last week I was like, oh, none of me a squad. Those guys are fucking dapper looking dudes. Like, I want to dress like them. Talk about this, they have some big goofy gun belt thing on top of their pants. That's fucking ridiculous. I take back everything. They're the biggest dorks in this series now.
It really does ruin the look, doesn't it?
It's like, yeah, I'm going to be...
Because they're all in these fancy suits, and they're just like...
Fucking cufflinks, ties, one of them has a vest underneath, and they're like, oh, then we wear big baggy pants with gun belt holsters on top of it that, like, stretch across. Like, ugh. Oh, that's just those two idiots. And Nanami is like, no, I'm not going to wear that. It's fucking ridiculous. I bought a suit. I'm not going to ruin it by sewing gun holsters onto it.
Well, I'm sure we'll find out soon.
Okay. Actually, he doesn't. We can see it later.
Sweet.
We can see enough of it looks like... Yeah, no, he doesn't. We see full-page spreads of him. Not full-page, but long enough spreads. Yeah, he doesn't. He's not stupid.
It's just his asshole teammates.
Yeah, it's just the fucking idiots. Fucking loser squad.
Well, that was a quick turnaround on that, wasn't it?
Now I'm like, I just want to look like Nanomiya. In fact, I'm running all my entire life off of Nanomiya at this point.
Alright, so, anyway, Aitsuji starts calling the action, and she's like, oh, 3 centimeters of snow on the ground, so running should be possible, but it appears their mobility is impeded, and so on and so forth. One of the things that I like about the commentary teams that they've had in this is that the personalities that they've gone with are such that they disagree on stuff, so mm-hmm. There's actually a point to two different characters being there, as opposed to them just agreeing on everything. So, yeah. And we get a little bit of that in this chapter with Kazama and Gakko and stuff.
Oh, I would love it if, like, fucking Bleach had to do it, and it's fucking Urahara and Chad, and they're both just like...
Urahara is like, I think that, I don't know, fucking Ninomiya Squad is the favorites in this match, and Chad's just like, I don't know about that. I think that they're actually the weakest. Nurahara says, Chad, you question, say things that you don't actually believe. Just like, you're right or wrong. Yeah. I'm sorry.
He smiles and they shake hands. And was like, what the fuck is this?
You have missed all of the action doing your bullshit.
And in the background, there's just a 6 foot tall hand. Like, it's like, what is this?
The 6 foot tall hand is just the play by play.
Yeah. You're not getting anything.
Fighting!
Like, I can't believe we fired John Madden for someone more incomprehensible. And you'd think, for a giant hand, he'd be really good at using the whole marker circling fucking play screen. He's terrible at it. He can't draw a circle to save his life.
He just, like, draws dicks all over the thing.
You'd think, for someone who is just a hand, he'd be either right or left-handed. He's neither. He can't draw to save his life.
Oh, God. So we get brief introductions to the other two members of Ninomiya Squad, who are Inukai, a gunner, and Tsuji, the attacker. Inukai is all like, oh, this is fun! It's like I'm stepping in stars, and Inuka's like, and Suji's like, you're such a dick. Stop messing around. You're gonna get shot. And then he immediately contacts their director, Hiyami, and it's like, it doesn't look like there are enough enemies in the radar. And she explains, or rather confirms, that that's because all of Azuma's squad is using bagworms. And she predicts that they might have grasshoppers so that they can move around more easily while everyone else struggles with the snow. So, smart planning. Oh, then we, as I mentioned, they have kind of a disagreement on commentary where Kazama is like, they're being, you know, Ninomiya Squad is being really cautious because, you know, Ninomiya has known Azuma for so long, so I'm sure he's trying to figure out the strategy behind the snow that Azuma Squad set. And instead, Kakko's just like, oh, the snow was totally not Azuma's idea. So. let's see here. People taking positions and stuff. Basically, everyone starts, you know, making plans, and all of them are like, hey, let's target Mikumo.
Yeah, he's everyone's the, like, let's beat the shit out of him. I'm like, no, don't do that.
He'll be the easiest to take out. Everyone's like, okay, you know, be cautious of Kyuga, because he's really, really good. You know, make sure that you guys team up if you're gonna battle him. But yeah go after fucking Mikumo. And Osama's kind of sneaking around and stuff, and he's like, I can't see Azuma Squad's. Maybe I should use a bagworm. Suddenly a meteor comes in. He's like, ah, shit! He starts running away immediately.
This is actually pretty cool, because fucking Tubby Palooza is just like, yeah, I have a grenade launcher trigger.
His guns look so fucking ridiculous. Kitazoe is his name. He's Kagura's gunner. And they're just like, god damn it, Zoe, you didn't hit anyone. And he's like, well, I'm just using my radar. It's the best I can do.
But it's awesome. Like, you just get these spreads of explosions happening, and fucking Inomiya doesn't give a fuck. He's just dapper as shit, just walking through the explosions.
No one gives a fuck. Osamu is literally the only one who gives a fuck about this. All of Inomiya's squad are just like, we look so fucking cool right now with our fucking ties. And then Yuma is just like, oh, hey, an explosion. Meanwhile, someone's like, ah!
Oh, explosions! Keepers!
Save me, Kitora!
And then we see Kagura Squad's operator, and I'm disappointed she's not as eccentric and, like, wild and weird as the rest of their group.
Yeah, because they've got crazy Kagura and then weird, nonchalant right. Kitazoe.
And they got, like, they're kind of like, you know, like, angry kid sniper. But it's just like, here we got a girl. Another girl operator. I'm like, no, she needs to be, like, a fucking voodoo doll priestess or something. Something so, wacky.
Ninomiya does this kind of cool-looking thing where he summons his asteroid, and you, like, see the cube dividing up into these six, like, pyramids that he just launches in this rapid barrage towards Kitazoe. And so Zoe's just like, oh, god, shit, he was the closest one. Help me, Yuzuru! And Yuzuru immediately shoots Ninomiya, and he's just like, eh, shield. Fuck you.
Yeah, suck it.
And he just, like, fucking ignores him, too.
Yeah, he's just like, I'll deal with it later.
Yeah, because he knows his position now from that, even though Yuzuru's got the bagworm. And so he just immediately gets in contact with the rest of his squad. And he's like, okay, Kizo and Emma are here. I'll get them. Tsuji, Inukai, you two get Tamakoma. Don't bother with Azuma squad because, you know, they're hiding and stuff. Once the numbers decrease, victory is ours. And so just takes the whole fucking thing in stride and shows, hey, yeah, pretty good leader at the top of B squad rankings. And then we get to Kagehira, who seems to take a much different approach, which is, I'm going to go play with Kuga, because he seems like the most fun. And, yeah.
Fine. Later.
I like it. I'm not sure if it's Yuzuru or their operator who says, all right, make sure you score the points. It must be their operator, because Yuzuru doesn't seem that talkative.
Yeah.
So they're just like, make sure you score the points, Kage. Don't waste Zoe's death. And Kijuzo is like, why is my sacrifice being treated like nothing?
Well, also, like, they're like, he didn't die.
He's not dead yet.
Like, he's angry because Kuga's just like, or fucking Kagura's like, yeah, whatever. Yeah,
what's that deal with Yuma, okay?
Yeah, and he's just like, why don't you care? But it's also like, you're not dead.
Even he's overlooking that. So Shiori starts to coordinate Tamakoma squad, and she's like, okay, the two attackers from Azuma are probably coming this way, so they might intercept you guys before you can meet up. Be careful. Chika, don't move because there are two enemy snipers, so you know, they'll make you easier to spot. If they catch you, you're done. And then we get back into the arena for more action calling, and Ayatsuji is like, okay, he's moving over here, he's moving over here, this is Kitazoi's specialty, and so on and so forth. And so she basically starts, I guess, no, she's just, I guess, trying to figure out the action is going on. She's like, okay, is Kagehira going over there? It looks like he's, Emma's going to try and assist Kitazoi and so on and so forth. And then they're like, oh, is Kagehira at a disadvantage? Because he's not going to have any support at the place where he's going to with everyone else kind of meeting up. And I keep on forgetting her name and having to look back at it.
Is it like Ko or something? Not Ko.
Kako.
Kako.
So Kako is like, if it's going to be a battle royal, he's not really at a disadvantage, though, because, you know, if they're waiting for Kagura to arrive, it would be tough, but if it's this big mess, his reflexes and intuition work well, because sniping and surprise attacks don't work on him.
Because he can sense impressions.
Yeah, so that means that it's kind of like in, oh god, what was that series that we had last year with the dragon?
Stealth Symphony,
yeah, where they had the whole thing where, you know, his powers would kick in if there was killing intent.
That's right.
So, I assume because Kagura's powers work on impressions of him, that if you, like, don't have, like, any, like, hatred or killing intent towards him, then you might not be able to detect it. But that's... They're not exactly trained to be assassins, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And so she says that she thinks the only person who can probably stop Kagehira on their own is Ninomiya, and since he's not actually targeting Kagehira, you know, yeah. And Kazuma also chimes in, and he is like, everyone will target the easiest person to score points on. That's how it's going to be for Azuma squad, that's how it's going to be for Kitazoe and Ninomiya and everyone, basically. This will be a show to see how Tamakoma will handle this, because Azuma's the easiest one to target. And we cut to Tamakoma's base, and what's his name? Little kid. Yotaro. It says his name right there. He's like, oh, where is it?
Can we just call him Capybara Kid?
Capybara Kid. Capybara Kid is like, why is everyone targeting Tamakoma? And Yusei is just like, because they're weak.
They suck.
And Capybara Kid says, murr. Murr. I fucking love that. But Yusei just says flat out, look, Tamakoma's got the most openings. And Jin's like, what, really? You seem awfully knowledgeable. And he's like, and Yotaro says, that's because I forced him to study! I shoved data into him!
This is suggestive. Where did you shove it?
But Yusei just says, look, compared to the other squads, Tamakoma is way below them. And he's like, oh, they won last time! Yeah! And he just says, look, the enemy's strength and the way they're being targeted is different now. There's no way they're going to win. If they do win, I would worry more about the level of strength of this organization as a whole. Such a dick.
He has a good point, though. He's like, look, if these guys are supposed to be the best of the best, why are they losing to a team that only has one competent person?
Right. But, of course, he doesn't know about the training that Chika and Osama have been going through, which we don't really know how
well. Yeah, I was going to say, we don't know. We know enough about Osama to know that he really didn't get a lot out of it.
And we also know that Chika is powerful enough, but she can't target people, although...
She can't shoot, she can't shoot humans.
But, you know, that's easy enough to overcome. It's like, maybe she'll start shooting people. That would be a pretty big difference maker. Then they would have two people who could score points instead of one.
Yeah.
But Jin's just like, oh, okay, you're so confident. Maybe you will want to bet that Tomoko's gonna lose then. And he's just like, I don't play pointless games. They're going to lose. I don't need to make a bet on it. And just like, all right, if Tomokoma 2 loses, I'll do anything you ask me to do within the limit of my own power. And thus many Dojinshis were written. Sorry. But on the other hand, he promises that he will return Husei's trigger if Tomokoma 2 loses. Like, basically, he says, like, yeah, if Tomokoma loses, maybe I'll return your trigger. And Husei's like, but if Tomokoma 2 wins, you have to do anything I ask.
Yeah, giggity. Yeah, about that.
So Jin's like, all right, so you're still feeling confident about it? And Yotaro's like, and I'll bet my snacks on Tomokoma 2!
He takes that one. He's like, deal! He just takes all these kids' snacks.
It's like, I fucking hate you dirty, cute, meat-in monkeys, but I love your fucking junk food.
Oh, your Oreos. They're so delicious. You have so many flavors. Where I'm from, we stopped with double stuff, but you guys made Oreo cream pies and lemon pie Oreo, watermelon Oreo. Sounds terrible. It is delicious to our alien tongues.
I don't know any of these because the only Oreos I can stomach are vanilla.
Oh, Nick, you're missing the glory that is caramel apple Oreos.
Well, I'm missing the glory that is chocolate, so there you go.
Oh, so you can only have Oreos that have vanilla
I don't like chocolate at all.
I know, but I'm saying the only Oreos you can have then are vanilla frosted and then vanilla cookie as well?
Those are the only ones that I've tried, so.
Okay. So you haven't even tried, like, a classic Oreo?
Well, no, because they're chocolate.
Okay. That's fair enough.
If there are other non-chocolate Oreos, I might try them. Anyway.
There is. It's the caramel apple ones. That was disgusting, though. I wouldn't get it.
Well, maybe. Whatever. Anyway, so Husei's like, oh, what are you scheming? And just like, it's just a bet. It's okay. I don't mind taking bets with a disadvantage because I can see the future.
Yeah, dickhead.
You know I can see the future. I told you this the first time we met. Do you not pay attention to me? Like, come on.
He's like, I'm sorry, I got confused. There were three people who could read mind powers going on. And I got confused. I thought that was just what everyone did.
Taichi? One of the guys from Ninomiya Squad, the guy who was jolly, is the first one to come across Osamu. He's like, oh, I got lucky, yeah. And that's where the chapter ends.
I want Osamu to kill him. Not because I like Osamu, but I want his stupid belt holster thing to go away.
He like cuts the guy in half at the belt.
Yeah, he's just like, your belt was stupid. I mean, Osama wouldn't say that. He'd be like, nice style, sir. It's just cutting him in half.
Sorry, but I have to beat you or else I'm gonna be late for lunch.
I heard there was lunch. Is it not being served?
Everyone gets food except him. He's like the Milton of all of Border.
He's like, I wanted to watch Commando on the way over, but it was PG-13. I'm not allowed to watch those.
Osamu, you're 15.
It's those parents' guidance still strongly recommended.
My mom says no.
My mom won't let me watch anything that's not one of the Peanuts movies. And even then, she gets pretty upset.
She doesn't like how they have a Christian agenda.
She's not kosher with the idea of a dancing dog.
Yeah, that's right. My mom is Jewish. That's why she's so overprotective.
Latkes and gefilte fish and all that.
Like a vegan, Osama, when are you gonna date that nice guitar girl?
She is Jewish, though, right?
Please tell me she's Jewish.
Oh, I'll be up and down. You'll just wait until you find the right girl. Oh, boy, I don't really know what you're into.
Just so long as they're a nice Jewish one.
Yeah. Just as long as a nice Jewish something is what you need.
Nice Jewish something. I'd be fine with Snoopy if he were Jewish.
Yeah, well, I'm not very fond of his airplane pilot days. That's when someone comes in like, ma'am, nobody was happy the fact that Snoopy has to have a 40-minute scene of him being an airline pilot. Or a fucking Red Baron pilot for a while. Nobody likes those. It's the one big smear on fucking Charles Schulz's legacy. Why do we have to keep seeing him as a fucking pilot? Nobody likes it.
It's a waste of the animated specials because then, you know, you've got the imagination and power to do anything you want. And it's still just him sitting on top of his fucking doghouse.
And it's like, who cares? He fucking does this all the time. And it's like a 30-minute scene. Let's get back to Charlie Brown getting rocks instead of fucking candy. That's hilarious. Fucking another 40-minute dogfight that ends with Snoopy all contemplating suicide. I don't fucking need. That's my 40-minute rant on Snoopy.
I got an apple. I got 5 sticks of gum. I got a rock.
it's just me, like, fucking Robert De Niro and Cape Fear. Like,
I got a rock! Oh, this Halloween bag!
Everyone's like, that's the 4th time they've done it. You could stop laughing that hard.
That's funny each time, though. It's the rule of 3.
Even when they get to 6, it's the rule of 3. Anyway. I think this time he can't possibly get a rock. Hey, guess what I got?
I'll bet they're going to do that 20 times in that movie that's coming out soon.
Oh, that looks depressing.
Well, I mean, it's a penis movie. It's got to be depressing.
I want to, like, it's weird. Here we go off topic again. But I want to, like, hope it to be good because I'm like, oh, wouldn't it be nice to, like, have one piece of, like, that old style of, like, cartoon to exist in the modern era? Like, wouldn't that just be nice for something to still be relevant from back then?
It's still gonna be 3D animated, though.
Yeah, but it's just a matter of, like, oh, Peanuts humor can still be, like, oh, kids can enjoy it. They don't have to, like, not everything has to be, like, a Frozen or Minions or something like that. Like, oh, that can still work. But then, like, you see the trailer and you're like, fucking Charlie Brown's, like, going around to fucking rap songs. You're like, oh, no, no!
Uh-oh, this is the wrong soundtrack! We need strong Christian overtones! Strong Christian overtones!
I was like, did I see Charlie Brown so much because my family was Catholic?
I have referenced the fucking Robot Chicken sketch about Charlie Brown about 5 times in that rant.
Oh, alright.
That's a great sketch, by the way. Anyway, that is going to do it for the recap portion of Weeklymonger Recap. So
stay tuned for our fucking Peanuts podcast. Up,
you've got a lot of people to thank.
Yes, I have a list here of names, and it's going to be a little bit long, but please, guys, you know, give them a moment here. These are all people who have helped support the podcast, and we're going to keep doing it each week then when more people pop in. But I apologize in advance. I actually noted it, though, in the tier. I am probably going to mispronounce a couple of these names.
Which is why I'm letting you do all of them.
Yes, so...
because... That sounds like more of a promise than a warning.
Yes. Guys, we're going to give a big thank you to Matthew, to Thousand Lion, Annalise Chrisman, Kyle, Alicia F., Loom Ranma Yasha, Carito Prime, Omar Kanawate, Danny Van Overbeek, Aerosol, Kevin C., Michael, Robert, Jason, Seth H., Eric the Orange, Carrie Capilla, Marana Matsusizik.
Matjek.
What's that?
Matuchak. That's how I would go about that.
Matuchak? Alright. Miranda Matuchak. Felix Stark. Sieg. Infamous Planet. Jason Dariano, which I am so happy I didn't say was Jason Derulo, because when I was practicing this before, I did. So I got it, Nick. Caster UK. Aaron Porter.
Kind of takes away from it that you mentioned that you messed it up.
I just wanted to know for a hot moment. I was like, Jason Derulo listens to us? the Bilby Guy, Maxi, so on and so forth.
That's the name that he's not actually skipping
to. Yeah, I'm not skipping to people. Christopher Bronebreak, which is a fucking awesome name. Hank Jan Mulder, which
I think that's how you pronounce that.
That I'm pretty impressed with myself. Thomas P. Hirsch, Peter Merrick, Neo Ultra Mike, H.H. Woot, Robert Headley, Peter Olson Brosseth II, Tord, Jordan Glazier, David Page, Jason Fink, Elizabeth Nunn, Andrew.
That's a fucking great name.
Elizabeth Nunn?
Yeah, because it's based on Elizabeth Munn.
Is that a thing?
Yeah.
Who is it?
You know. It's a bad...
Wait, are you like, it's that important person, Elizabeth Munn?
Oh, I gotta admit,
Who I have to look up now?
I must have gotten like two different names mixed up in my head. That's no one. I'm sorry. I did that.
Were you thinking of Olivia Munn?
Maybe. There must be an Elizabeth that I'm thinking of that combined it. I get some celebrity names confused with each other, okay? You have no idea how many times I have said Mel Gibson when I meant Mel Brooks. Like, seriously.
That is, oof. Then again, I also...
They're kind of polar opposites.
When I was a child, and this is really less of, like, I mistook names and more than I'm a racist, I thought Ernie Hudson and Arsenio Hall were the same person, so... Continuing on, Andrew! Mesenchymal? Mesenchymal? Alright, I'm gonna give it... Brand Beamish, Duncan Davis, Sean Thompson, Steven, Lance, Justin Mansour, or Mansour? I didn't want to go with Mansour, but now that I've said it, I guess I kind of have to go with it. Daniel, who I know is Colbolo, James, Malachi, Pedro Garcia Huidobro?
Come on, dude.
Huidobro?
You don't pronounce the H, he's Chilean.
Huidobro. Is that it? Yeah,
that's better.
Alright.
Away the bro.
Alright. Mr.
I think that I messed it up too.
Alright, so I feel in good company. Mr. Swank. Chad.
Yurke.
Jacob Phillips. Sophia Blue. Sarah Hanley. Glock 3BB. I always forget it's not 2-3s. It's because Glock's name's stupid. And I know Glock, so I'm not being mean to him, but Glock 3BB means fucking nothing to me. Colin Raiden McRae, Lucky Swordsman, Feral the Gecko, King Waza, Kevin Mueller, Gallen Embry, Brandon White, and Mitch Parker. Guys, thank all of you for your support. It has meant a lot thus far, guys, and we're going to continue adding into the podcast to improve things. We're going to continue adding to this Patreon to give more options and help grow the show, and yes. This is one small step along the way.
Yes, and if you do donate to our Patreon, which we do, want you to know that you can do at patreon.com/weeklymongerrecap. First of all, you have your name mentioned on the show as soon as you basically become a patron, and you can also get some other stuff depending on what level you decide to pledge. Basically, that's just a rookie thing. But also, if you pledge $5 or more, then you'll have access to an exclusive monthly podcast that we're going to start doing soon. We already have plans on what the first episode's going to be.
Yes. We announced it last week. It's going to be top 10 manga badasses.
And just be assured that if you do decide to pledge to the show, you're not just throwing money at us. This is money that will go into the podcast and will help us to continuously do it and keep on improving it. And offer you guys bonus stuff.
Yes. And also, in case you missed it as well, we reached the tier where we're going to be doing a Q&A episode once a month. So,
in addition to the other monthly.
Yeah. And that's not exclusive. That's going to be going out to everybody. So if you're in your iTunes, you're downloading our podcast, because of course you subscribe to us on iTunes, and you get another podcast like twice in a week, you're like, what? What is this? Understand that's a Q&A podcast, so. Mm-hmm. And we will be recording that live. We'll let people know when that's going to be happening and everything like that.
In the meantime, thank you everybody for joining us here for the show. We record the show normally on twitch.tv/RoloT, usually Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, but due to my work schedule, we had to rearrange stuff this time, but we should be back to our regularly scheduled Wednesday show next week, and hopefully on that show, we will be talking about Shaman King.
I'm good. I'm getting my way through it, Nick.
I'm working my way through it as well. Should be ready to go on that.
Basically. Yes, that's my hope. All right. I forgot how long Shonen Battle series can be. Like, I read through 9 volumes, and I'm like, I must be like halfway done this thing, right?
No.
I was like, oh god, I'm not even a third of the way done this.
Also be sure to check out past episodes on weeklymongerrecap.podbean.com or on iTunes. As Chris mentioned, you can subscribe to us, you can leave a comment or a rating, and those really help us out as well. Be sure to follow us on Twitter for updates. He is at RoloT and I'm at YRulerOfTime. And you can also send us criticism, questions, and most importantly, suggestions for future manga for us to read to our email address, which is weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com. Special thanks go out to Steve Manartakaris. You can check out his work at narokfanboy.deviantart.com, idrivebooves@tumblr.com, and you can also be a patron of his at patreon.com/steveman. Special thanks as well go out to Felix Stark and The Infamous Planet for making those awesome visual editions of our podcast. And that should do it.
Oh, and I forgot to mention also, we did get a 5-star review on iTunes from one of our Patreon supporters, Chad Irky.
I don't know where you're from. I'm just making an accent up on their.
He's like, I'm an American. I'm your neighbor, Nick. You're an asshole.
We've known each other for 5 years.
He says, if you are a fan of the most popular manga series out there, you should be listening to this podcast. The two hosts are hilarious, and they were able to get me into Food Wars and World Trigger. So thank you, Chad. We greatly appreciate not only your support, but your 5-star review as well. Those both are tremendously helpful. We're slowly, one step at a time, clawing our way, and one day, I don't want to say when, may never happen, but I'm holding on to the hope, one day we're going to get past at least a woodworker. I'm not going to say all of them. There's some high-level ones. One day, we'll get one past one.
Right. So, any closing thoughts?
Did you hear that they're going to do a Jumanji movie reboot?
Really?
Yeah, it's going to come out.
I can see that. I mean, that's...
Can they?
No.
Children play board concept. Games?
Well, they already did basically a second Jumanji game with the
Zatara, Xanadu, the space one. We know what we're talking about.
The one that nobody watched.
Yes. But
I think the concept could work. I mean, it all depends on the execution.
But I'm like, kids don't play board games anymore. Like, will they understand it? They're like, you know, you bring a board game out, and they're like, oh, I guess we have nothing else. All of our cell phones have fucking been destroyed by this EMP blast. I guess we'll play this creepy-looking board game instead.
Well, you know, you could have a similar concept where someone gets trapped in it several years beforehand, and then, like, they're hanging out at their grandparents' place, and their electronics have been confiscated, and they're forced to, you know, entertain themselves in other ways, and they pull it out, like, oh, okay, we'll play this, and that's, you can just go from there.
Who was the?
It's not that hard to justify it.
I guess. Who is the female lead in Jumanji?
I don't fucking know.
I remember liking her at the time. Hold on, I gotta look this up. Because I'm gonna say, like, you can't put... Well, I know Kirsten Dunst was in it, but I'm, who...
Who is she?
Bonnie Hunt, that's it. Bonnie Hunt was, the wife in that. But yeah, Kirsten Dunst, she was the young daughter in that. This is a very young role for her. But, no, I'm like, you can't... Because obviously Robin Williams won't be in it. I'm like, who do you get from the other ones? We were like, David Alan Greer's not a whole lot. He's like he'll be the one character that connects our two movies. I'm like, wow. Good for you, David. Good for you. Bye, everybody.
Anyway.